Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a few minutes, Ed Koch's final political battle. Even in his mid-80s, the former mayor was making news and influencing New York, and we will explain how. Reminisce about Ed Koch's final political battle coming up in a few minutes. Right now, two of the current Academy Award nominees for Best Picture, Django Unchained and Lincoln, focus on the history of slavery in the United States, albeit in very different ways. But you may not know that the story of slavery in the U.S. originated on the British plantations of the Caribbean, where thousands of slaves were brought from Africa first to grow sugar, or white gold, as it was called at the time. The sugar plantations became the model for the plantation system in the United States and began a Caribbean slave narrative that gave birth to our own. My next guest tells this story through 12 generations of family in her new book, Sugar in the Blood, A Family Story of Slavery and Empire. Welcome to the show, Andrea Stewart. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And let's start with your family history. You have traced it back to your earliest known British ancestor and identified another ancestor on a register of slaves in Barbados. So you have slaves and slaveholders on your family tree?
That's right. Yes, I do.
Well, tell us about these ancestors and how far back. Well, your British roots go back to the 1600s, right?
That's right. The earliest I can get back to is a man called George Ashby, who is a blacksmith, and he arrives in Barbados around before the 1650, so he's my first known ancestor, and he's a small planter, 9 acres, and he has one servant, a white servant, who was a white indentured servant working with him on his land. So he was a very modest planter, but he is the founder of a dynasty that continues to this day. Very different, I'm sure, from the story that he'd imagined it would be, as it's a very multiracial family and very large now and very global. So that's how life goes, really.
How far back can you trace your African lineage?
Sadly, because of the way that slaves were treated, it's quite hard to find any traces until they're mentioned in the records of white planters. One of the tragedies of slavery is of course same as in Barbados as it would be on the mainland America, is that they weren't seen as people. So from the moment they were put on a slave ship, they became numbers. So it's impossible to trace them unless they are in the records of a planter. So for me, my first slave ancestor comes alive for me in the middle of the 18th century, or rather coming at the end of the 18th century, going into the 19th. And I discovered him on an inventory of slaves at 14 years old. And he's described as 14 years old, colored, which was the term they used for children who are of white and black parentage. Mm-hmm. And he's a laborer, described as a laborer. He turned out to be a carpenter a bit later.
Listeners, do you have ancestors from the Caribbean who may have a similar history? Can you trace your roots back to early sugar plantations? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Andrea Stewart, author of Sugar in the Blood, A Family Story of Slavery and Empire. The history of slavery continues to be part of the U.S. narrative, obviously, whether it arises in Hollywood movies or in Black History Month celebrations or however. How do the British today see their legacy of slavery?
Well, I think in Britain has not really, in my opinion, come to terms with this story. It's not the attractive story of history that the English prefer. And I think because, slavery is an ugly and frightening and unpleasant story it tends to be forgotten. And I think a lot of it has to do with Britain feeling very much that it was something that happened a long time ago and very far away. Whereas in mainland America, of course, slavery took place in the same place as, you know, the whole colony was involved in that. So it's very, the English, I think, at the moment are in my opinion, a state of disavowal of what's really been the past. And particularly sad because there are, you know, many people here, like myself, who are the descendants of slaves. And I think if there was a real interest or willingness to confront that history, the situation here would be a great deal better.
And what about the Barbados of today? I suspect many Americans travel to the Caribbean for vacation without thinking much about the history of the sugar trade built on the backs of slaves. How do Barbadians remember that history?
Well, I think the island is more actively involved in remembering it because it's impossible if once you go to Barbados not to be aware of sugar. You know, when you drive from the airport to any hotel, you're kind of going to go past fields and fields of waving sugarcane. And you know, there are plantation houses all over the island. The names of half the island are sort of predicated on various plantations. The legacy of sugar is absolutely, totally dominates the island. So it's impossible for people not to be interested. And because there is an active engagement with this past because that past is still so important in the present.
A few months ago on our program, we talked to a descendant of slave owners and a descendant of slaves who were trying to start a dialogue about how we identify with our slave history and heal the wounds that remain. They were Sharon Leslie Morgan and Thomas Norman DeWolf, author of Gather at the Table, The Healing Journey of a Daughter of Slavery and a Son of the Slave Trade. And I wonder if the fact that you are descended from both slaves and slave owners affects how you view the actions of your forebears on either side.
Yes, it's an interesting issue, that, isn't it? I feel very, I'm to all intents and purposes black, and therefore I feel a great deal of kinsmanship with, and perhaps more strongly identify with my slave ancestors, of course, but I also feel there's various aspects of my kind of white ancestry that I also feel some degree of kinship with, say, for example, my first ancestor, George Ashby, the blacksmith. I can't help but be sort of somehow quite proud of his daring and his kind of courage at leaving Britain in the sort of, you know, 17th century to take this terrible and huge risk on the New World. It seems to me extraordinarily brave and wonderful. Of course, sadly, he would be of the generation that would ultimately become the first that were enmeshed in the slave industry.
Mm-hmm.
So then, of course, that which is, of course, a hugely horrible and lamentable decision. So my feelings about him are very, very ambivalent. He would, in the end, become a Quaker, so he obviously had some difficulty with the slave industry, but and the whole world of sugar and slaves. But that was nonetheless how they made their money. So you have a very, very mixed feelings about my ancestors on in that context. For the large planter from whom I'm directly descended, which was George Ashby's great 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 grandson, who had a large plantation, and who was the father of the slave I'd mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
For him, it's very difficult because he's my ancestor, and he did give my slave ancestors certain advantages by giving them privileges on a plantation. But I also accept and see him to be what he was, a very conservative man who believed devoutly in the world of slavery and had everything invested in it, a man who decided you know, was part of the militia, and you know, who was in every way conventionally a planter and believed in the world that he was part of. So in some ways, you know, I mean, he's. I feel that, you know, his blood runs through my veins and in ways and has created who I am, but he's also, you know, a very ugly figure.
Indeed.
And I have to accommodate both those things.
You write about how shades of color matter in Barbados more than they do in Great Britain, where race is more polarized as black or white. Can you talk a little bit about how you experience race in Barbados?
Well, I think in Barbados, because the slave system was so completely overwhelmed the island and so completely dominated everybody's experience, the kinds of values that it set up kind of endure in some ways. And what you have is still a system where lighter-skinned black people who are de facto descendants, clearly descendants of planters, up until very, very recently, very much dominated the sort of middle-class landscape. They were, like my ancestors, achieved certain privileges from being the offspring of slave owners. And I think there's a parallel class, of course, in America, on mainland America, thinking of, you know, Jefferson's slave progeny and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was very... So there is still a legacy of preference, there's still an association with lighter skin, with greater privilege and power in Barbadian society, though I believe that's changing. In Britain, of course, none of these nuances and subtleties of color and shade have no real bearing. You are black or white, and the association in Britain of being black is simply of being disadvantaged and poor. I mean, it's a very simplistic kind of analysis.
Last question. In the process of writing the book, did you meet others who share similar stories, similar mixed backgrounds of slave and slaveholder ancestries?
I did, and oddly enough, most of them live on mainland America. They're in the U.S. I've discovered... I've made just two examples, one of whom is a relative I discovered on a genealogy site, and he's ostensibly white, and I revealed to him that he had black ancestry, and we, you know, that he's the descendant of said Robert Cooper's, one of his children, slave children. And a very, very dear cousin I also discovered, who's is ostensibly black, of course, and she discovered that she was a descendant of a white planter. So it was been very interesting. But so many of them have ended up living and being part of the great mainland American story.
So you're the Henry Louis Gates of Great Britain, helping white people figure out that they're part black and black people figure out that they're part white. We thank you very much, Andrea Stewart. Her new book is Sugar in the Blood, A Family Story of Slavery and Empire. Thank you so much.
Lovely to talk to you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Ed Koch's final political battle. Even in his mid-80s, the former mayor was making news and influencing New York. We'll remember just 2 years ago. Stay with us.